The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bob Burney Live.
Looking at today's news through a biblical worldview.
Well, I would say that one of the nominees of incoming President Joe Biden has some serious baggage. Her name, Kristen Clark. She is being nominated for a very high position in the Justice Department. Back in 1994, she invited a flaming anti-Semite to speak on the campus of Harvard University. She was president of the Black Students Association. Prior to that, on October 28, 1994, she wrote an editorial to the editors of the Harvard Crimson, where she clearly claims that black people are superior to whites. That, again, is the classic definition of a racist. Before I get to her response, I want to mention also that in December of 1994, a Jewish student on the campus of Harvard University wrote a letter to the Harvard Crimson about Kristen Clark. In fact, the title of the editorial, of the op-ed piece, is "My Kristen Clark Problem." He begins by saying, "Last week, Wellesley Professor Tony Martin spoke at Harvard at the invitation of the Black Students Association. Martin, the author of an anti-Semitic tract entitled 'The Jewish Onslaught,' used his Harvard Forum to denounce the Jewish tradition and the Jewish people, et cetera, et cetera. Sitting in Boylston Auditorium, listening to my heritage," again, this is written by a Jew, "listening to my heritage be defamed and lied about, my thoughts turned away from the anti-Semite at the lectern and to the young woman who had introduced him. In fact, immediately after the introduction, Martin lavished praise on Kristen Clark, the BSA president." Then I don't have time to read all of it. "The Kristen Clarks of America's campuses." Now, again, this is a woman just nominated by Joe Biden to a civil rights post at the Justice Department. Quote, "The Kristen Clarks of America's campuses will soon be on the front lines fighting against racism and other societal and historical impediments to better lives for African Americans. This is why we all should be thinking about Kristen Clark. We, too, should learn from those who came before us. It is our duty as Jews, as moral beings, to care about the black community. And if we must care about the black community, we must care about Kristen Clark. What, I ask myself, was she thinking when she invited Martin to come to Harvard? Did she think black students needed to hear what he had to say? When she told the Crimson that, quote, Professor Martin is an intelligent, well-versed black intellectual who bases his information on indisputable fact, was she being serious?" Let me skip a couple of paragraphs. But Kristen Clark has given us different questions to ask. These are unsettling questions about why the Black Student Association must, every couple of years or so, bring the ugly specter of anti-Semitism to a lectern on this campus. Does the young leadership of the black community think Jews and the Jewish heritage are their enemies? And then he says, "The damage has been done. Black students have already been barraged with misrepresentations of what the Jewish people and ethical tradition have to offer them. Since Kristen Clark was the one who presented Martin, a certain amount of damage has been done to her credibility and the trust between her and the Jewish community. He ends his editorial, "Now the ball is in Kristen Clark's court. I hope she cares enough to answer by addressing these questions in a public forum. We need to know, Kristen, if you stand with Tony Martin or if you stand with us." Well, she did not answer that at the time. Now, granted, that was in 1994 when she was a student at Harvard. She did not answer. She stood by her invitation to a flaming anti-Semite to speak to the students at Harvard on behalf of the Black Student Association. Now, fast forward to a couple of years ago. She was questioned about this a couple of years ago, and she did say it was a mistake. "I'm not anti-Semite, and now I shouldn't have invited him." She gave a very half-hearted apology for inviting this guy to campus. Now, okay, that was her response to inviting this anti-Semite to the campus. What about her editorial to the Harvard Crimson claiming in no uncertain terms that blacks are superior to whites? Her response? I was misunderstood. That's not what I meant. I read to you almost the entire letter. She clearly was stating racist sources that honestly believe that black people are superior to whites, genetically because of melanin and because of other things as well. And she said that it could be proven scientifically. It's what she said. And her response, not a retraction, not an apology. People who criticize that just misunderstand. That's not what I meant. That is just one of the nominees to the new Biden administration. Again, her name, Kristen Clark, President-elect Joe Biden's nominee for Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights. She responded last night, and I quote, Kristen Clark, President-elect Joe Biden's nominee for Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, responded last night to recent criticism of her past comments about racial superiority and her role while a student at Harvard University in organizing a 1994 event that featured anti-Semitic comments by a controversial professor. She said it was a mistake to have hosted the professor and that her comments on the letter are in the letter, have been twisted. Well, again, I read to you almost the entire letter, and I don't think the interpretation has been twisted. Now, I'll show my ignorance, and I honestly a little embarrassed. I don't know whether the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights has to be confirmed by the Senate? I'll have to check. I honestly don't know. But if she has to be confirmed, I wonder if this will be brought up. Not a real good start to an administration that campaigned on the theme of equality. We'll see how this turns out. My number, 877-BOB-LIVE, 877-262-5483. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll wrap things up. Got a story out of Kentucky that I think you'll be interested in. when we return.
Talk radio that makes a difference.
Makes a difference.
This is Bob Burney Live.
I don't know many of the details of this story, so I really hesitate to even share it with you, but wow. And hey, I know absolutely nothing about Bitcoin. It is a currency, but it's not in physical paper money currency like dollars and pesos and francs and yen. It's all digital. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know how it works. I don't know how you get Bitcoin. I don't know how you spend Bitcoin. I've just heard of it, but I honestly don't know anything about it. I want to make that clear. But evidently, there's a story going around, and it seems to be true that there is this guy who has $270 million in Bitcoin. And evidently, since it's all electronic, you have to access your Bitcoin on your computer. He's forgotten the password. He's got $270 million in Bitcoin. And I did a tiny little bit of research during the break, and evidently on whatever site he has his Bitcoin stored, it's like an electronic bank, and he's got $270 million worth of Bitcoin in there. The password is generated by the site, and it's like 24 characters long. You know, AQ24SG, capital L, small p. It's 24 characters long, and it's generated randomly. You don't pick it. They pick it for you, and then you write it down. He doesn't remember where he wrote it down. He doesn't remember what the password is. And like on a lot of things, you only have so many attempts, and then you're locked out. So according to the story, whether it's true or not, it seems to be, this guy has two more tries to come up with the correct password. And if he doesn't get it in the next two tries, he's locked out of his $270 million in Bitcoin. Now, if he's got that much money, maybe he doesn't really need it. But I just can't imagine. All right. And now several of you listeners are going to say, well, Bob, you don't know about Bitcoin. Here's what Bitcoin. Okay. I don't know a thing about it. I'm not sure I want to. But $270 million. Two more attempts to put the correct password in or he loses it. Yesterday, I was talking about the difference between just mere political differences and personality differences and real evil. Abortion is evil. I believe that. I believe it's murder. Murder is evil. Murder is wrong. I believe abortion is evil. And I believe that those who support abortion are supporting evil. And so, therefore, I think the argument could be made that they're complicit with evil. That's why, you know, all the controversy. Well, I'm a Christian and I can't vote for Donald Trump because he's not a nice man and he's said bad things. Well, yeah, he has said bad things and often he is not a nice man. He does not display the character of Christ. No, he often does not. And I wish he would. And I said it earlier. If you haven't seen the speech that Donald Trump, President Trump, gave at 6 o'clock last night, you need to watch it. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. I wish that was the Donald Trump we saw continuously through his presidency. I really do. But anyway, I don't think he's an evil man. He supports life. He supports marriage. He's fallen. He's weak in some areas. He is far from imperfect. He is flawed. But I don't think he's evil. But then you have people like Nancy Pelosi and others who are blatantly abortion support. That's evil. So I don't get. You bring up the whole character thing with Donald Trump. And I get that. I understand it. I understand your point completely. He's got character issues and I can't vote for it. But you can vote for someone who supports the absolute evil killing of innocent unborn children? That makes no sense to me at all. None whatsoever. Which brings me to this story. The Kentucky legislature has passed a bill to protect newborns who survive an attempted abortion, which, by the way, does happen. Happen every day? No, but it does happen. A baby is attempted to be aborted. They survive the abortion. This law in Kentucky is very similar to a federal law that Democrats in the House of Representatives have blocked for at least 2 years. Well, the legislature in Kentucky has passed this legislation. It simply requires if a baby who is attempted to be aborted survives the abortion and they are alive, they have to be given proper medical treatment like you would any other child. Who could oppose that? Well, the governor of Kentucky, a Democrat, has threatened to veto it. And, of course, Planned Parenthood is opposing it. Sometimes you're just looking for proof of evil. I believe Planned Parenthood is an evil organization begun by an evil racist woman by the name of Margaret Sanger. It was begun for evil purposes. It continues today for evil purposes. And sometimes you're just looking for a little bit of proof. A piece of legislation that doesn't block abortion, doesn't prevent abortion. It just says if a baby survives and attempted abortion, they have to be provided with medical care. The governor is going to veto it. Planned Parenthood is opposed to it. That is evil. Hey, have a good evening, but remember whose you are.
Listen. Think. Discern.